Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. We're broadcasting live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and incidentally, the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. And we are supposed to have a guest, Jane Kelsey, today, but the person who organized it gave me her fax number, and it's not going to happen. It's just not. So, we have an article here that she's written instead. Governments may sign up for strategic reasons to a text designed by the US to serve its own interests. This is about the TPPA, the Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement. It makes a much bigger plan. And of course, anybody who knows about trade deals, it's essentially a way forward for some form of greater governance by much fewer people, over much larger people, and basically destroying absolutely everybody in the fracking process, including any sovereignty or history or any form of entrepreneurship. So here we go. The 15th round of negotiations for the Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement begins today in the Sky City Convention Center. Around 500 negotiators from 11 countries, including the United States, Canada, Australia, and New Zealand, will spend the next 10 days behind closed doors trying to make progress on 29 chapters in this mega, quote-unquote, free trade deal. For New Zealanders, Few New Zealanders will know this event is taking place, let alone the significance that an agreement purportedly about trade has for many aspects of everyday life, from affordable medicines, access to the internet and food labelling, to smoke-free strategies, new health and safety rules to prevent more Pike River catastrophes, or re-regulation of shonky finance companies. Speculation around the TPP is likely to focus on whether Fonterra, that's the world's largest dairy giant, owned by a big collection of New Zealanders allegedly, will get to sell more butter in the US, whether the big drug companies will be able to undermine Pharmac, and whether foreign investors will be permitted to sue the government in private overseas tribunals. These are all important questions, but they are dwarfed by the bigger game plan that explains the US drive to secure this agreement. The commercial ambition, articulated by trade representative Ron Kirk, is to build what will become the largest, most dynamic collaboration of our time, producing a new 21st century gold standard trade agreement. However, the TPP is not simply or even principally about trade. There is well-documented pushes from the US to secure extensive new rules that will serve the interests of their corporations and empower them to enforce those rules. But it is increasingly clear that US politicians see the TPP as a vehicle to re-establish America's ascendancy in the Asia-Pacific region to counter China's emergence as a superpower. In the US election campaign, candidates Barack H. O'Barry and Mittens Romney competed to demonize China and hailed the TPP as the pivot of their containment strategy. The Romney, just the Romney, that's what I'll call him, endorsed the TPP as a dramatic geopolitical and economic bulwark against China. And what else was here? I've kind of lost my place. Obama, describing this pivot towards the Asia-Pacific, said, "We're also sending a very clear signal that America is a power organizing trade relations with countries other than China, so that China starts feeling more pressure about meeting basic international standards. That's the kind of leadership we've shown in the region." What, you mean the international standards for the lead paint that was specifically put in there in the construction manuals by Mattel? And a whole bunch of kids got real sick off the lead paint that the American company told the Chinese to put on it. That's the kind of leadership we'll continue to show, says Obama. This followed speeches from Secretary of State Hillary Clinton that positioned the TPP as the economic limb of a two-pronged U.S. offensive dubbed, and anybody who's a conspiracy theorist who knows about the project for the new American century and how they called for a new Pearl Harbor will love the title of this, America's Pacific Century. The second limb was the reassignment of U.S. military presence from Iraq and Afghanistan to strategic allies throughout the region. this might be the reason why Auckland, which is New Zealand's largest port, who can take giant cruise ships, has been dredging the harbour to make it deeper for larger ships. What's larger than one of the largest cruise ships in the world? Aircraft carriers. This poses a dilemma for New Zealand. The government is ideologically committed to concluding this agreement and eager to cement closer ties with the US at the same time. We have a growing economic dependency on both China and ASEAN. ASEAN's a little trade agreement that we've got in the Asia-Pacific region already. Back in February, Trade Minister Tim Grosser, who's a globalist, told Radio New Zealand, if we in New Zealand smell or sense that this is an anti-China thing, we would leave the TPP. Australia's Trade Minister reportedly said it would follow New Zealand out the door. The TTP is now undeniably an anti-China thing, and we are still in there. Problematically, the government, the stakes in relation to China have gotten even higher. 2 weeks ago, at the East Asian Summit, negotiations were launched for a regional closer economic partnership, an RCEP, RCEP, involving all the ASEAN countries, China, India, South Korea, Japan, Australia, and New Zealand, but excluding the US. The rhetoric is almost identical to the TPP, which, with predictions that the RCEP will emerge as the world's largest free trade zone, surpassing any existing regional FTA bloc. Given its inclusion of the most dynamic economies, its gigantic economic capacity and unparalleled market potential, the Taipei Times says it is widely believed that the RCEP is ASEAN's counter-proposal in response to US-led Trans-Pacific Partnership. Although ASEAN initiated the RCEP, China is clearly its driver, just as the US sets the terms for the TPP. In seeking to reconcile our participation in both negotiations, Prime Minister John Key said he did not want to overemphasize the China-US standoff. Grosser optimistically believes that the two mega agreements can converge to form a compatible Asia-wide integration agreement, which will dominate everything. Whether or not you think that is desirable, it ignores both geopolitical realities and the divergent paradigms on which China and the US operate. A serious risk is that governments participating in the TPP will sign up for strategic reasons to a text designed and for the US to serve its commercial and foreign policy interests. As a result, New Zealand and Australia, alongside Singapore, Malaysia, Brunei, and Vietnam, who are members of ASEAN, will be caught up in a new Cold War conducted through the proxy vehicle of economic integration agreements. Jane Kelsey is a professor at the University of Auckland. And we're getting some messages back down from one of my organisers, that Jane Kelsey should be available now, but we'll just try that one again if we can. AFR, if you can hear me there at the board, see if you can get Professor Kelsey on the show here. That'd be nice. Other than that, I do want to stress to people that this now kind of affects everybody listening to this show. Doesn't matter what country you're in. I think there's something like not 8 or 9 different countries listening in on the airwaves just at American Freedom Radio right now. This is going to mess everything up for everybody in a big, big way. And I have the cognition that these people are essentially just lying to everybody. Just bold-faced, no concern for truth or justice or the anything way other than the we're going to screw you up big-time way. And, you know, I can't even speak right now. It just makes me too angry. Think about this. You ever seen anything that says Made in America on it? Well, under the TPP, we've got similar things like Made in New Zealand, and it's incidentally a little triangle with a little Kiwi outline in the middle that looks kind of like an all-seeing eye. How coincidental is that? And apparently under the TPPA, that will be illegal. And we have these commercial campaigns in New Zealand sometimes, you know, buy New Zealand made, buy New Zealand lamb, buy New Zealand milk, buy New Zealand blah, 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 blah. Apparently that will be illegal under the TPPA. To advertise it here, of course. And what else have we got here? Oh, yeah. You know, Codex Alimentarius and Agenda 21 and all of those giant UN documents that essentially want to make vitamins illegal. Yeah, that's in there too. Provides a nice vehicle for it. And if the government doesn't like it, in fact, if anybody doesn't like it, they can go to the International Court, which is ruled by the bankers and the corporations and has decided 100% of the time. You know, it's not even 99%, it's 100% of the time. Every single time they've taken a government or anybody to court in their court, it's a private court, which they own, they get the judgment they want. And you have to pay shockingly large amounts of fines. Because apparently it's really, really evil to attempt to serve your country and your people rather than serving the scumbaggery interests of enormous corporations who have long since been bereft of a conscience. That's what we want, isn't it? We want sociopathic scumbaggery individuals who have a court system and a justice system that works for them and will not in any way, shape or form allow other human beings to have a say that is listened to. Yeah, sure, you'll have a say, but whether or not it's listened to, that's the clincher, you know. I mean, how difficult is it for you to get across things to your local politicians? It's relatively difficult, but you can do it. How difficult is it to get things across to your national politicians? Fracking nigh on impossible. So how difficult do you think it's going to be to have your international rulers have a meeting with you as a private citizen in some city somewhere that they don't even fracking care about? It's going to be impossible. This is the whole point behind centralization, is to ensure, absolutely ensure, that no mofo gets any say whatsoever. That's the essence of freedom and sovereignty, isn't it? Being able to have your voices heard and not have to pay money in order to do so. You know, it confuses me how people can be this stupid. It really does. I mean, the inherent danger of it is so catastrophically massive that it's practically incalculable. We have no idea the consequences of these things. Well, most people don't. I do. It means that we're going to be a European Union, South Pacific version, and we will be headlined into a slotted, nice little global control grid, whap-bam, for which the globalists can control all commerce, all trade, and all governments. And then they will put in some kind of central structure, probably the UN. And whoever's numero uno secretary general will be the king of the world. You know, by no stretch of the imagination am I exaggerating. There will be a king of the world in some way, shape or form. He can say off with their heads like on Alice in Wonderland. And sure enough, you'll get your head cut off. Aren't these people crazy? Oh, yes, they are. Isn't this insane? Oh, yes, it is. But I'm not the one who made it up. I'm just reporting on what these people have already admitted that they're doing. So if you want a free country, if you are in any of these countries that was read out in that article there, if you're in the US or New Zealand or Australia or Korea or Japan or China or anybody, you need to be stopping these massive trade deals. You need to be getting out there. You need to be going to these big meetings with a giant bullhorn.
Stop the TPPA! Stop it! It's going to destroy everything in your country, all your sovereignty, and anything else you can freaking imagine. Stop it now!
That's what I'm talking about. I mean, I don't think it's an unreasonable thing to disrupt things that are destroying you. You know, they say, oh, it's disrespectful if you bullhorn over ruthless, criminal, sociopathic, corporate control grid mofos who are attempting to destroy your country and many others. It's rude to interrupt them in front of their fracking trade deals so that they can continue to lie to everybody and continue to allow people to just keep signing on to all of the stuff that unwittingly destroys them and everything that they ever stood for or valued in their lives, all for pennies on the dollar. This is the easiest way to take over a country, is economically. We'll be right back at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. Welcome back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. You might be able to hear the ridiculously heavy rain and occasional thunder strike in the back here. This is what happens when trade agreements are getting signed. It's like the nothing out of the never-ending story descending upon the country and all of its evil blackness and tentacly chemtrailed brilliance. It's fabulous. I love this country. And it's also Fukushima irradiated, so everybody snapped up a part-time job as an incandescent light bulb to help the economy. My very special guest is Christina Tobin from freeandequal.org. Now, if you're not familiar with freeandequal.org, some of the people, particularly the listeners from this show, may have remembered a while back when there was a thing called a U.S. election. I think that's the technical term. and there was, in not 200 years, has more than two parties ever been up on the podium together to have a debate? am I the only one who sees something fundamentally fracked up about that? Well, for the first time ever, and I say that operatively, Christina Tobin of freeandequal.org managed to hook up Larry King himself and a number of other parties to have the very first third-party presidential debate. And, oh, my God, what a great debate it was. Instead of the usual, "You're a liar! I hate you! Stop lying to me and destroying the country!" that I normally have when I'm listening to the general presidential debates. It's more like, "Yes! Fucking yes! End the drug war and do all of that good stuff!" I loved it, man. It was inspiring because you'd seen something that you've always wanted to see but never thought you would. Christina Tobin, welcome to the program.
Hey, Vinny. Thanks for having me. You're quite a funny guy.
And then, girl. Now, would you be able to explain a little bit about how did... Wait, hold on a second. Let's back up a second here. The election's over, and I want to know, after this is gone, what is it that you're doing now at freeandequal.org?
I'm working full-time for Free and Equal Elections for the rest of my life, so I think while many think it's a time to take a break, really, 2013 is a year when I feel that Americans are going to get more engaged in the electoral process than ever. So we're here to open not only a studio starting in Los Angeles, a network, likely a reality show. We've got some really big national projects and a huge event out in Arkansas next May, uniting leaders across the political spectrum, left, right, and not influenced by private interest money, just good people. There are far more good people in the world than there are not, and coming together to reform the electoral system throughout the United States and to make the world a better place. And this is one of many, many projects that we have going on for the foreseeable future.
Now, I was going to ask a very long question, but instead I'll ask something that probably has a very short question, which is the direct opposite. What's not wrong about the U.S. elections? Is there anything that's actually just not that bad and works, or is it all just defunct?
I'm at a loss for words, so I think that says a lot. So
yeah, let's do the answer to the long question then. What is wrong with the U.S. electoral system?
Yeah, I found it fascinating. You know, in speaking to so much international press, it seemed like almost all of them, they had no idea that there were more than two parties in the United States. And in fact, there were 27 people who ran for president this last election in the United States that were on the ballot in at least one state. So, you know, the big problem we have is the two-party system. Like you said, they've been playing us for centuries now, and they go back and forth. I've seen from inside the circles that they work together. They're friends. They're allies. It's really bad. And so, really, in America here, we have a one-party system that's controlled by private interest money, the elite at the very top who control the Federal Reserve, who prints our money here in the United States, which is an independent private institution. It's not federal. It's misleading. And that money and all that evil goes down, or negativity, that is, trickles down to the corporations who control the Democrats and Republicans alike. And look where we are here today in America. We have the drug war. We have the Patriot Act. We have drones, SOPA, NDAA, war. These are things that Americans don't want, and we don't have the right representation in office. And here at Free and Equal, we're here to break through that stranglehold, and we will through 2013 and so on.
Hopefully people won't continue to elect misrepresentatives and start getting people who actually does represent their interests. And I was wondering, what access does the American public actually have to the people that they would vote for president? Versus what access do the major corporations essentially, what would you call them? Donors, bribers, Midas, everything they touch turns to Shiite Muslim type people in their massive corporate offices with their prostitutes and cocaine. I mean, how much more access do they have than the average person?
I mean, I would say that very much a lot more. The corporations are the strings. You know, if you can just imagine Pinocchio and the strings of Democrat, Republican alike, there you go. That's exactly. And, and you know, each string represents a corporation. It just, you know, they essentially control these candidates. They're puppets for the corporations, again, that are tied into the banks, the Federal Reserve System. And the elite, the warmongers at the very top, from Rockefeller to Rothschild to Morgan. It's that simple. United Nations, big problem there. And so the way we're going to break that is by creating a place where, and inspiring the youth and everybody to run for office for the local races in 2014. The local races are far more important than the presidential race. Of course, the media would lead you to believe otherwise. As we know, the money in media is just as impure as the money in politics here in America. And in doing that, we're not only going to list every single candidate on a national database that we'll be launching in 2013. Every single candidate, imagine clicking on a county and seeing, oh, there's 12 people running. Many are going to be probably more independents than affiliated with the party. And we're going to provide the resources to help those independents run, how to overcome ballot access barriers. I can elaborate on more about what that is, getting involved and being a part of opening the debates, being a part of an open debate, to getting rid of voter fraud, to implementing instant runoff voting, proportional representation. And we're going to bring together all of the ideas, the experts, the authors, the musicians, Hollywood, you know, everyone across the spectrum to reform the system and make not only the United States a better place, but when we achieve that, we're going to inspire the world to be the same way. What a great year it's going to be.
Well, it should be. And I've got this conclusion that 2012 has been a big, big year for all of us, and 2013 is going to be even more so, significantly, because I think people are actually getting encouraged, you know, against all the odds, Christina, against all the scumbaggery, all the financial manipulation, all the media kerfuffle. The people who know what is truly happening and wish to change it are not only growing in number, but they're also activating themselves and actually doing something about it, because it's all very well to know that there's something wrong, but what's better is to do something about it.
Yes, and the youth. Don't underestimate the youth. Probably not only in America, worldwide, but you know, here in America, 18 to 28-year-olds in the polls, they're going to come out in full force. They're not a force to be reckoned with for the 2014 local races. There's no jobs. They're going to run for office. And the power of social networking and technology is just so amazing. And I do see the left and the right, leaders that are not controlled by private interest money, finding that they have almost everything in common, lots of things in common. Again, like we all want to get rid of NDAA, SOPA, Patriot Act, the war, war on drugs. And I see them coming together and communicating, and I see the government, yes, being cut back, some say up to 80%, maybe 40%, 60%, whatever the people want. I see the power shifting back to the state level, and I see our government shifting back to the origins of the Constitution, what our forefathers would have wanted. Parties don't work. The Constitution doesn't mention parties, nor corporations for that matter. And, you know, with the power of social networking and technology, we can and we will shift back to the origins of the Constitution. And that's what Free and Equal Elections is about. Article 1, Section 3 of the Constitution. All elections shall be free and equal.
Well, define free and define equal.
Free, I would say, for the people to have the freedom to smoke marijuana if they would like, and to have the freedom to, you know, to express their opinions and not suddenly be confiscated, taken out of their home. That's what our government's up to. To petitioning for candidates or for initiatives and having no problems with the police saying you're not on, you know, private, just all freedom, freedom of will and equal. I do see all of us as equals. This is, the government's intention has been to divide us, whether it's families and races. And, you know, when you look at the prisons in America and you see that wrongfully, I think 70-80%, I'm not an expert on this topic, but we will bring together experts to speak about it on our future conferences and panel discussions. But, you know, when a majority of the people are held in bars, held behind bars because of, you know, marijuana, you know, it's just, and typically they tend to be primarily African American, you know, the divisiveness, and really we are people, we are one, unity coming together. And that's been one of several reasons why the two-party system has thrived throughout America. Number one, because of ballot access barriers created back in 1890. You may have heard of the Australia ballot. Well, it derived from that. And ballot access, what it means in the U.S. is that in order for a party to get on the ballot, they have to get X amount of signatures. Of course, the D's and R's make the rules really easy for themselves, and they make it virtually impossible for third parties and independents to get on the ballot throughout the United States. So, you know, between that and many other factors, they stacked the elections in their favor, and they work together, and we're here to shine a light on the electoral process. The cockroaches are going to scatter, and I see independents taking back the election and making the world free and equal.
Well, I would act under the assumption that if you see everything as enslaved and unequal, that you simply do the direct opposite, hence free and equal, right?
Yes.
If that's the case, there's an end game. Is what sort of structure? Because the Constitution gives general rules and what have you. And I haven't actually read it, but in terms of actually having free and equal elections, what kind of structure would there be? I mean, let's imagine for a moment that we are having election 2016, okay, and it is a free and equal election. Currently, you go to a very long line, go to a DynCorp voting machine, and they flip it for whoever they want. They get super PACs and what have you, and they give near on $1 billion to both candidates. And both candidates are financed by the big business and war interests. And then there's about maybe 18 to 20% of the population who are stupid enough to vote for either of them. And about half of them vote for one of the guys, and so that becomes the majority. About 10% of the US population votes for the one guy that allegedly controls the rest of the 100% of the US population, and that's called a free and equal election, and that's what we're doing right now, right? How would it be different, specifically?
Well, the number one thing a lot of people have been speaking about, amending the Constitution, you know, my role as a leader is to create the dialogue, to create the platform, and to create the movement, and to create more leaders as a leader, not more followers. And in doing that, I'm personally not an expert yet on the Constitution, but I'm connected with many people who are experts throughout the United States, like Michael Badnarik, a great ally and friend of mine of ConstitutionPreservation.com. He's traveled across the country years teaching about the origins of the Constitution and our forefathers. But first and foremost, I would say, once again, the Patriot Act, unconstitutional. SOPA, unconstitutional. NDAA, all these different things that, again, the two-party system, the money in politics, has created. And so the origins of the Constitution, you know, bringing the power back to the state level is obviously another important component. And you know, I don't know how to go into greater detail than that, but again, some say, experts have told me that if we were going to shift back to the origin of the Constitution, government would have to be cut back up to 80% in the United States. And so, you know, that's a very
high... It makes sense that about 80% of the current U.S. administration is unconstitutional. Doesn't that make sense to you?
Yeah, you know, and government for me is okay if it was maybe 20% as large as where it is today, and there was integrity, transparency, you know, and people that actually were elected that weren't running because of money, you know, the money in campaigns and hiding behind a label and being controlled. And honestly, I see a lot of leaders within both parties even breaking away from their own parties because they see the elites are taking away all control from that as well. So pretty amazing. Mm.
I would like to see like a top 10 debate or something of that nature where you had eight alternative candidates and the two main ones all taking 1 minute questions and each at a time back and forth, and you probably only get a few little bit of policy pieces out, but you'd actually understand how much variation there is to control America.
Come gather round, people, wherever you roam, and admit that the waters around you have grown, and accept it that soon you'll be drenched to the bone. If your time to you is worth saving, then you better start swimming or you'll sink like a stone. For the times, they are a-changing.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com, and incidentally, you can listen live on the homepage of the VinnieEastwoodShow.com, as well as access all the archives you could ever love and conceive of to get your brain juices flowing and nicely medium rare, burnt on the edges type thing. Didn't even know if that makes sense. My very special guest is Christina Tobin from freeandequal.org. Can I ask, how long has freeandequal.org actually been around for? When was it first established?
We were first established near the election of 2008. I was the national ballot access coordinator for independent presidential candidate Ralph Nader. And he's a huge consumer advocate in the U.S. You may know of him. He ran with the Green Party line back in 2000. Excuse me. And so Ralph Nader's well known here, as well as Ron Paul and so on. And him being a big leader on the left and Ron Paul on the right, we've been endorsed by both of them. And then after I finished that job, I hosted a presidential debate in Washington, D.C. with independent Ralph Nader and Constitution Party candidate Chuck Baldwin. And that was the creation of Free and Equal. It aired televised live on C-SPAN 2, the first nationally televised presidential debate with alternative candidates, you know, not R's and D's. And it was the number one archived video of 2008 for the political season for C-SPAN. So people wanted to see that. And, you know, here we are. We've done a lot of things between 08 and 12. And in 12, the people wanted to see it again. And wow, we got Larry King as a moderator. It was so cool to sit next to him. He's a huge supporter of Free and Equal Elections, and we expect to work with a lot more celebrities and musicians, athletes as well. So it's just really cool to see us bringing everybody together in all different genres and areas and music and so on. It's going to be a fun year, too. We're going to make our events a lot of fun.
Well, that's the way to get the youth in, isn't it? Celebrities and fun, basically.
Music, yeah. We're looking at Smashing Pumpkins for our May event, and Jesse Ventura is interested in speaking, and then we've got ties to Dennis Kucinich, and, you know, you bring in some celebrities, you know, Charlie Sheen. We've had a lot of people say, you got to reach out to him, and Woody Harrelson and Joe Rogan and music and, you know, athletes. It's just, it's really cool, and leaders and politics that are really independent of the political system, and we're going to make it fun. You know, it's the music, outdoor, great music, and bringing in international bands. And I've recently moved out to the LA area, California, because I anticipate doing a lot of traveling throughout the world. And I know I'll be coming to New Zealand someday, too. I know I'll be out in Australia over Christmas, so that'll be cool. It's not the same, but at least I'll be heading out somewhat towards the area. But I look forward to meeting a lot of great people like yourself around the world. For decades to come, Benny.
Well, this is another thing that interests me as well. And, you know, I'm trying to organize a couple of different activists and what have you to come here on their little tours as well. Maybe I'll be able to help you with that. But the other element is America is so important and so central to the entirety of the world. There was an old saying, when America sneezes, the rest of the world catches swine flu.
Well, how about America? We sneeze a huge, powerful, peaceful, you know, I think it's going to be very spiritual too. Like, there's a lot of spiritual stuff going on in America now, but, you know, just all these different, bringing everybody together. It's going to be a really fun, powerful, peaceful movement here in the United States, and there's going to be substance to it. It isn't just going to be people angry, not knowing what to do. No, it's going to be people that know what to do, coming together to educate, to inform, intellectual conversation, and you know, working with really great groups. I mean, like intellectual, you have to link up with them, intellectualrevolution.tv. You know, just a huge, lots of resources there to educate, to inform, to inspire, to wake up, and It's going to be a great year, because we do have the answer. We have the light, and our role here at Free and Equal is to build others. And when we do that and we reform the electoral system, then suddenly people are going to be healthier. They're going to be living longer. Science will evolve drastically. We're almost living in the dark ages with how slowly science and technology is just not anywhere where it should be. The government's been suppressing it here in the U.S. for quite some time. But, you know, so I'm so excited to be a leader in this movement, and again, to inspire so many others. You know, if I wasn't here, there'll be 100, soon to be 1,000 million people to take my place. So it's really
now,
great.
Another random question. Your surname's Tobin. Does that have any relation to the Tobin tax?
No, there's a lot of confusion there. Absolutely not. My father actually runs one of the largest tax fighting organizations in America for 35 years. He's not the James Tobin of the Tobin tax. I feel bad for my dad, because his whole life people have confused him for that, but he's no connection whatsoever. It's just the name is the same. Go figure. But he's been fighting taxes of billions of dollars in tax increases, and he's really not liked by the D's and R's in Chicago. He's been based in Chicago. So I firsthand have seen my dad. He ran for governor back in 98 as a libertarian in Illinois. And that's where I saw them wrongfully knock him off the ballot. And I just kind of grew through a legacy through him, and helping to get him on the ballot 4 years later. And then Ralph Nader, and then National for Ralph Nader. And I have a petitioning company. It's gotten well over a million signatures to get candidates on the ballot across the spectrum as well. So it's really thanks to Dad for inspiring me and showing me what I'm destined to do for the rest of my life.
Yeah, I've always found that's how it is with people who spend their lives doing the right thing. They're either born into a situation with parents who, by which becoming that kind of person becomes inevitable, or they have no such awareness and no such experience, and they become really talented and really successful in the mainstream world, and then wind up getting very disillusioned by something bad that happens to them in the course of their job, and they spend the rest of their lives trying to fight it.
Yeah, I agree. No, I definitely, you know, have been inspired by a great upbringing, and, you know, all of us go through struggles in our life, childhood, and I mean, it's just the nature of the game, but, you know, the key is to grab onto the positive things that happen to you, and maybe the not so negative things, you create a healthy distance and you learn, oh, I don't want to do that in my life, and you learn from it. I mean, every situation, negative or not, it can all be positive. So, you know, you are who you surround yourself with, and that's what's so great about our team at Free and Equal, that we've let some people off recently because the negativity just doesn't go with our team. However, we just hired 3 more people last week. We're hiring 2 or 3 vetted, grassroots, positive, proactive, you know, no drama, just good people that love what we're doing. And it's just so fun to be with a team. It like gives me goosebumps even talking about them, because I like enjoy going on the calls with them, you know, every day. And it's just so cool that we all get it. And people work, it's like every person's 5 or 10 people in one. We're such hard workers. And it's finally, I have the team that I've been wanting to have for so long, and it's growing. Quality over quantity. So great quality here at Free and Equal.
Well, it's a good thing, because I've found that the best teams are those that are very small, very dedicated, and multi-talented.
Yeah, that's what we are. And, you know, we have the grassroots teams on the ground. So, I mean, a couple of weeks ago, I was a keynote speaker at an In the Fed rally out in Arkansas, Little Rock, Arkansas. And what I found on the ground dealing with independents, I developed relationships with these individuals on the ground. It was so different than dealing with parties this last decade. Like, I got to know them, and there's just a lot more warmth. And next thing you know, we're covered by all the major media for this protest in front of the Federal Reserve, and peaceful protests, and from newspapers, the TV, and now we have 6, 7, 8 leaders volunteering their time for Free and Equal's event in May, soon to probably be 10 or 12, across the spectrum, from Tea Party leaders to the creator of the In the Fed group to Occupy, Little Rock, left-leading group, and soon to be the Green Party group, so libertarian. And, you know, just the grassroots, this is it. You know, everything that everybody's been waiting for in the grassroots movement, from Tea Parties to Occupy Wall Street, both being co-opted by the system in the U.S., we are it to bring them together, to reform and to unite and to take down and put an end to the two-party system and so on.
Well, it's on the points you agree that you should come together and collaborate. The points that you disagree, you can probably leave those for another time. Perhaps a time when we're not about to be ruthlessly exterminated by a group of sociopathic criminals.
Well, think of it a little bit, a little bigger on that, is that the points that we disagree on, like, for example, you know, a right to, or I guess a pro-choice, pro-life, a lot of those issues will kind of heal themselves as people come together, because with an economy that's stimulated, that's good, that's healthy, I don't know. It's been really a distraction that the two-party system has used. I'm not saying that it's not an important issue, but I don't think that abortions and stuff like that would be as big of an issue if people realize that they can actually afford to take care of kids, or, you know, to get it. Just, I just think it will become less and less of a problem, and more lives will be saved, and it just kind of naturally will fall into place. So those divisive things, so they'll still be down there, but they'll be much smaller and healthier and better. And so I just, again, the bigger issues we agree on, like you said, maybe not blowing up the earth, you know, and killing people, you know, that just, we're going to put a stop to that, starting in America and eventually worldwide is the plan.
Yeah. Exactly. Hey, do you want to kill people? No. Do you want everybody to take away your freedoms and live in a dictatorship? No. Do you want to destroy the entire world's environment so that nobody can live on this planet? No. Well, then we've got the fundamentals done. Let's work together.
You know, so it's, yeah, again, there are far more of us, Benny. There are far more of us out there, you, me, your listeners, and I hope a lot of your listeners get involved in your office. I look forward to learning more about New Zealand in the future. I really look forward to learning from you and others when I come out there. So thank you so much for your time.
Thank you for yours too. Christina Tobin from freeandequal.org. We'll be back in a minute, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back. All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Finney Eastwood Show, broadcasting live from New Zealand, syndicated internationally through AmericanFreedomRadio.com. The American dream is not dead. You just have to be living in New Zealand in order to appreciate it. My very special guest is Josh Tolley from The Josh Tolley Show, or it's joshtolleyshow.com. That's Tolley with an E, T-O-L-L-E-Y. And he's a radio show host of some note. And incidentally, I think maybe about a week or two ago, somebody sent me an email saying, Vinny, you've got to get this guy Josh Tolley on your show. So I sent him an email through his website, didn't get a reply, and then this guy named Zach Carter from freeandequal.org said, okay, well, we need to get Christina Tobin on your show and Josh Tolley. And I was like, okay, well, I just got what I wanted. Josh Tobin, everybody, welcome to the show, mate.
Oh, glad to be here. I'm glad however it worked out, so.
Yeah, you know how everybody says it's, you know how everybody says it's meant to be, it's fate or whatever. And I don't know, meaningful coincidence, synchronicity, whatever. Something important is going to be talked about during this hour between you and me, I can assure you, ladies and gentlemen. So, Josh, unfortunately, I have little awareness of you. I know that you've been on several mainstream media outlets as a guest before. Your show has been running for an extended period of time, and you come with the extra added gusto of being personally recommended and virtually the spokesperson for freeandequal.org. So, is there anything I've missed out?
No. You pretty much got it. I host a syndicated show here in the States. We are through terrestrial radio on a number of stations here. We also have listeners in 200 nations now, so we're going pretty good in that route. I wrote a book, Quit Your Job or Die, Discover the Importance of Self-Employment, and been doing a lot of business training, political training, and things like that. And then when Free and Equal came around this election cycle and said, hey, we want to have an impact on the political system, I said, how can I help? And here we are.
It's the way it works, isn't it? And how did you get into this this realm of debate and talk and getting into the new media spectrum that's kind of now growing and taking over the old media?
Well, I guess a lot of it came from the business training. I started my first business at 18, second one at 19, third one at 22. And right about that time, people started asking me, well, can you help us start a business? And I found that there were a lot of business owners, but there were very, very few entrepreneurs. So I launched a series of classes and started talking exclusively on business and how to become successful in business. And then that same approach that is based on logic, reason, and strategy, people ask me, well, can you take that same approach and apply it to relationships, religion, politics? And I said, sure, absolutely. Started speaking a lot on that, started writing a lot of articles that were getting picked up by news organizations. And at that time, I had a manager who was fielding some calls through some traditional distribution media channels. And I didn't want to go that route. I wanted to make sure that I owned the show. You know, what good is writing a book like Quit Your Job or Die, Discover the Importance of Self-Employment, if I'm just going to become an employee of some broadcast company? So we held out for a while. And then Ted Anderson over at GCN, he came along and said, hey, loving the work you've been doing. Have you ever thought about hosting a show? And as you pointed out so eloquently a few minutes ago, it was just meant to be. So he put us on GCN. We air 9 to 11 Monday through Friday, right before a program called The Alex Jones Show. I'm sure a lot of people are familiar with that show. So we're the lead-in to Alex 5 days a week. And we, like I said, aired through traditional means. And then, of course, we're taking advantage of alternative media streams as well.
Well, you know, I think that's an idea, man. Alternative media is much the same as superstitious people. It's easy to take advantage of it.
I like that.
And speaking of it, there is, how can I put this? There's an element out there of people who think that we're in it for the money or we're in it for the fame or in it for the recognition. And it's because essentially the same reason why people get drawn into medical services, become ambulance officers, things of that nature, is because they believe at the time that they have empathy for other people and they want to help other people and it makes them feel good. However, if you see too many bad things, if you have too many bad experiences while you're in the job of helping people, you can lose that empathy. I'm not sure if you can lose it permanently, but it does happen. And I was wondering, Josh, how do you keep yourself genuine? How do you keep yourself on the level with all these terrible things that you must see and talk about on your radio show?
Oh, that's a really great question. I've done so many interviews and nobody's asked me a question like that. I would say the thing that keeps me grounded is really not doing this as a main source of income. I mean, you know, there are great broadcasters out there who are, you know, professional broadcasters. They went to school for it and all that sort of stuff. But coming up from a business background, I'm in business for a living. The radio and everything that went through media channels is something that I was very uncomfortable with, to be honest with. When I was 19, I was so shy, I couldn't order a hamburger from McDonald's. I couldn't pick up the phone and order a pizza. But I had this very moving experience when I was 21 years old. I was sitting across the dinner table from a couple in their mid-30s. They had a couple of kids, and they retained my services in order to start a business. And we put out a plan, and the plan was a workable plan, a plan that was in their realm of achievability. And they started crying. And I looked at them, and I'm like, why on earth are you crying? And they said, well, because we've been praying for months for something. And it was at that point that I started to think, well, maybe there are other people who are going to bed every night thinking, is this all my life is? Maybe there are people who wake up and on their way to work, you know, a few tears hit the steering wheel and think, man, why am I leaving my wife 30, 40 hours a week for a job that I really don't like and a life that I really don't feel is going anywhere? So I started putting other people ahead of me. It kind of brought me out of my comfort zone. In reality, I'm still very uncomfortable talking to people. But I realized that humbly, what I bring to the game is something that is needed. And if we're going to achieve freedom, if we're going to achieve liberty on a global scale, then we need to get more logic, reason, and strategy into the equation. And if I am just one of many who can bring that, then it's my responsibility to do so. So the thing that keeps me grounded is realizing that my path shouldn't have led here. I didn't go to school for broadcasting. I had no interest in broadcasting. So every day when I hit the on-air button, it's just a constant reminder of how lucky I am, not how lucky the audience is to be here.
Well, entrepreneurship's going down in a big way. I think it's been likely stamped out in many cases where people are having too much trouble paying the taxes and doing all the accounting, and they can't even develop or sell their products because it's soaking up all their time and their resources and their budgets and all the red tape and rules and regulations. Mate, that's not how an entrepreneur works. An entrepreneur does not know rules. They do not know hours. These are people who have incredible abilities that cannot be harnessed by anybody else but themselves and make the world a better place simply by doing what they naturally do. We should allow them to do it. As long as they're not hurting anybody or damaging somebody's property.
And well, go ahead.
I joke about this. What do you call an entrepreneur who creates snacks for people?
What's that?
An entrepreneur.
Oh. Well, entrepreneurship.
Well, hold on. Before you can, sure. One last thing.
Yeah.
You were talking about how you have this ability to talk and create businesses. And I was thinking about this. Then you said, so I took responsibility to kind of fulfill that place because it was necessary. Now, does that mean inherently that if you have an ability to do something, it is then your responsibility to do it?
I think in a sense it is because I mean, kind of as you hinted, you know, there's no real growing platform for entrepreneurship. you're absolutely right. Even in a world where we have a lot of small business owners who technically own the business, there are very few entrepreneurs. And I think when you realize the world is hurting, when you know why it's hurting, how it's hurting, and the direction that it's heading, if you can do anything and you know you have a skill set that could aid the advancements of the whole, then in a sense, yeah, you should be responsible. You should be accountable to do something. That'd be like saying, if I'm a doctor and I pass an accident on the road, it's my obligation to do something. Matter of fact, in that case, it's my legal obligation. If I don't stop and help, I can be held accountable. Well, the same is true for the economy and for people's relationships and the political system. If we can help and we don't, then the blood is no longer on the hands of the evildoers in the White House or in Senate, Congress, Parliament, whatever. The blood is now on our hands because we failed to do anything. And, you know, same is true with people who talk about, you know, the lack of faith and how faith is leaving the planet. You know, less and less people are religious. The same analogy is true. You can't blame evil for doing what evil is supposed to do. You can only blame yourself for not doing what you were supposed to do to fight against evil.
So let's use another analogy here. Entrepreneurs are people who find a niche and fill it. They see a problem and they solve it. They're problem-solving people in general, right? Correct?
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Absolutely.
Now let's think about the in relation to the human body. Let's say the economy is a human body. The entrepreneurs are the white blood cells who see the cancer or the viruses and things of that nature. And it's their job to go and destroy those little problems that actually damage the whole body.
Yes.
So who's your target, really, at the end of the day? Because a world where our choices are restricted thus by legislation means that there's also an immune system working against us. We're trying to protect the body, but it has a counter immune system essentially to prevent itself. It's like the economy has AIDS.
Well, you know, when it comes to the economy and politics, the relation there is, I mean, one, it's almost synergetic. One helps the other. And when you talk about, well, who's the target, it's not really one target. And that's kind of where the strategy of this whole thing comes into play. It's not as if there's one guy or even one elite group. You have a situation where there are people who want to, you know, carry out some sort of misconstrued agenda. But then you also have other players on the field. You have the ignorant, and that's not supposed to be an insult. You know, you just have the people who don't know yet. And they seem to get in the way. They always vote for the wrong guy or they always purchase the wrong thing. So they are equally on that field. And it's not a target like a military target, but it's something you have to deal with. And the other thing you have to realize, too, is another quote-unquote target on the field is the conversation itself. We let the people who we oppose control this conversation way too much. And a great example is the economy. We tend to look at our governments and say, well, fix the economy, fix the economy. And in reality, the economy is only economic activity. We control economic activity. And in a very real sense, there's nothing that they could do to stop the growth or promote growth. The only thing they can do is change our mindset towards it. There's still trillions of dollars out there. It's not like September 20th, 2008, there were trillions of dollars, and then September 21st, we lost it. It didn't actually go anywhere. It's just not being spent. It's not being circulated. We're not engaging in that activity. And even if you are one who is opposed to the fiat currency as I am, you still realize that if it's being used as a weapon against you, strategically speaking, you can take that weapon and use it for your purposes too. And that's really why the base of this, there is a war against entrepreneurship. They don't care if we take to the airwaves and say, oh, it's the Bilderberg. They don't care if we take to the airwaves and say, well, the Federal Reserve System is a bunch of private bankers. And the reason they don't care is because when we know, it still doesn't do them any harm. What does them harm is when we start taking back control of the conversation and we start taking back control of how this game is played. If we start implementing entrepreneurship again, And we start getting back to a system where it doesn't matter what the value of money is, the economic machine is still working. Then we take back control of the message that gets out, regardless of what they try to accomplish.
Is it possible to condition people into being entrepreneurial? Currently, we're conditioned into being mindless workers. Is it possible to educate people to do the reverse?
Well, I actually think people are born with some sense of entrepreneurship. When I wrote the book, Quit Your Job or Die, Discover the Importance of Self-Employment, people asked me that question. They said, well, do you really believe, Josh, that everybody can be self-employed? And I said, well, let's just rewind the clock a little bit. If we look at 1897, everybody was self-employed. And if you weren't, you had a job only to learn a skill as an apprentice or a journeyman until you could become self-employed. It wasn't until after 1903 that we really started conditioning people to give up their dream and, you know, take on employment. And coincidentally, as the rate of employment grew, so too did the rate of complacency amongst the population. If you look at the voting records of people who are employed, more likely than not, they vote along the same lines that does damage to that very population base, because they take that mentality of an employee. And I'm not saying it's bad. This isn't supposed to be an insult, but let's just look at employment. When you're in a situation of employment, you're counting on your employer to provide you a paycheck, to provide you a working environment, to provide you health insurance. Well, what's the conversation we're having with government? Whether it's right or left, Romney or Obama, we're asking them, what can you provide me? Well, that's a stark contrast to what it was 120 years ago. 120 years ago, the population said, we got this. How can you keep government out of the way?
I reckon we should have a new political slogan. Vote for me. I'll take all your stuff off you.
Yeah, exactly.
No provisos, no provisions. You're on your own, and suddenly you are forced to live your dream. Isn't that interesting? As soon as Bernaysian propaganda with the women suffragettes smoking cigarettes in a parade that caused so much hullabaloo and popularized smoking for women. Isn't it amazing how people have been grafted into giving up their dreams to work jobs they hate for people they don't like to buy crap that they don't need? You listen to the Vinnie Eastwood Show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. Josh Tolley from the JoshTolleyShow.com is my guest, and we'll be right back after the break. Ladies and gentlemen, you can join us in the chat room at the VinnieEastwoodShow.com.
Well, there's only one thing I need to know. Whose side are you on?
Welcome back. I take the scumbags out on holiday and put a bullet in the back of their heads after we hang them from the neck until dead. You listen to the Vinnie Eastwood Show.com. I'm very, very, shall we say, perplexed at many, many points in my life about which direction this world is actually going. Does anybody else feel like that sometimes? How there's so much information that you're confused as to what's real and what's not anymore, and it's difficult to kind of break it down. And I've devised a simple methodology to eliminate this kind of bad feeling. It's called making fun of the things that you don't understand and laughing about them. People do it all the time. I'm sure everybody went to high school who was different from everybody else understands exactly what it's like to be laughed at. And when we talk about these misrepresentatives who get elected, these agents of darkness and scumbaggery that have seem to have usurped all freedom and all power and all morality from the majority of decision making in government. The best thing to do about these people is laugh at them. And in many ways, it would be a lot better if these politicians weren't all the way in Washington, D.C., if in fact they were going to restaurants and shopping in grocery stores in your very town. So that way, when anybody comes past them, they can go, "Hi, scumbag! You're passing a lot of really crappy legislation. I don't like you." You know, spit on him as you go past. Somebody throws a slushie on his face. You know, goes into the grocery store. "Oh, have you got some bananas? Have you? Oh, you can shove those up your ass." Beep, beep, beep. "Is that going to be cash or charge, you scumbag?" And he goes into a restaurant. He goes into a McDonald's, and the person behind the checkout counter says, "Hey, scumbag, what do you want today? Do you want one globule of spit or two on your burger today?" Imagine how quickly legislation and the way it's going would change if these people were personally held to account by everybody they talk to in any given day. That would be hilarious. We'd turn that into a movie. Some guy wakes up after a coma, and the world is kind of this dystopian place where politicians get what they deserve. It'd be hilarious. My very special guest, sorry for holding them up, is Josh Tolley from The Josh Tolley Show. Welcome back.
Oh, man, this is fun. I like this. This is great.
Well, we do have one rule that is opposed by the studio and one rule that's opposed by the government. The rule imposed by the studio is have fun, and the rule imposed by the government is you can't say beep, 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 beep on the air.
Oh, okay. All right. I got it. Check.
It was a bit clever there. So what do you do for fun, Josh? Do you like to drink, mate?
I have a lot of hobbies. I'm a martial artist. I spent a lot of time in the security industry, as it were. I love to ski. I just got involved in ham radio. We just got a sponsor on the show, hamandbeacon.com. So they got me involved in ham radio. So now I'm transmitting around the world doing that. And of course, you know, I love to go out and ruffle the feathers of people who want to oppress others. I think that's an absolute blast. I love waking people up and, you know, doing seminars and training classes and just watching the lights go off in people's heads and say, "Oh man, didn't know it could be like this." So that's what I do for fun.
Yeah, it is actually quite fun.
Oh, it's a blast.
I was just remembering this morning, there was this one time I was bullhorning one of the mainstream media, like basically right in his face in a big crowd of people. So I think it was about Tony Blair or something like that. And I said, "Look at you with your collar around your neck and cuffs around your wrists. What do you think that means? You're a slave, boy. And you have to report what you're told on."
Yep. You know, you made a really good point with the idea of holding the scumbags accountable. We've kind of gotten to this place where we've been told that, you know, we don't like the life we have, and in order to fix it, we have to fix the community. But you can't fix the community until you fix the county. And, well, the county's, you know, busted, so you can't fix it until you fix the state. And you can't fix the state until you fix the federal government. And now they're telling us, well, you can't fix the federal government until you fix the world through global politics. And in reality, if you or I were on a plane and the flight attendant said, "Okay, when we go down, you have to put your oxygen mask on first before you save anybody else around you," that's the exact same approach that we need to take to business and to politics. We have to put our oxygen masks on first. We need to fix that at home first, then fix our community and spread it outward. You can't start globally and spread it inward. So the conversation we're having and what Free and Equal is up to as well is absolutely vital to that fight.
Okay. Well, I see it as multifaceted, as if you've got, I don't know if you've seen The Matrix, how they have a tower in the middle of the city where all the dropships come in, and all these spider webs, let's say, are around that tower. The tower is the thing that you got to control, but the problem is there's a spider web coming at it from 360 degrees in every single fracking direction. It's going to take a very, very long time to cut all of those web strands to free your central support structure, which would be freedom and entrepreneurship, essentially. Those are the two things that really drive a country forward. The United States grow maybe 10% in the economy every year, I think, over 100 years. That was the reason why, because all of their freedoms were protected and people weren't able to steal everybody else's wealth off them or pay them penance for living on their land or having massive land dictatorships and things of that nature. Okay? And all you got to do, and our other saying, right, in the end, everything comes back to the beginning. How was it working before it went so awry? What do you think, Josh?
Well, I think if we look at the beginning and we look at, let's say, the beginning of this modern incarnation of the United States of America, they were fighting for more than religious freedom. They were fighting really for entrepreneurship. And of course, they don't teach you that in school. But in a sense, they already had religious freedom. Matter of fact, that's why they came up with like the Thomas Jefferson letter to the Danbury Baptists, which meant some separation of church and state. Because they already had multiple religions. The king didn't care. What they were really fighting over was ownership of property, land, and the ability to secure more of it. So when you look at, you know, this march towards freedom and this push for liberty, it really has to be founded and funded with this equal push for free enterprise. Free enterprise is the fuel for freedom. It has been throughout history, even in situations like communist countries, dictatorial countries. There's always opportunities for entrepreneurship, and every city west of Jamestown in the United States is the result of entrepreneurship. And for some reason, we've given that up, and we think that freedom can be fought for and won by posting a lot of really cool Facebook posts, but it doesn't work that way.
That's quite funny. you can imagine what's going through somebody's head. Did you know people were emailing NASA asking them whether or not 2012 was going to be the end of the world?
Yes, I did. And then they're trying to keep younger people from killing themselves because they're afraid that in a few weeks we're all toast.
And just think about the likelihood of this headline. NASA announces end of the world. You know, what are you going to do? Email them and they'll just, you know, one of their little secretaries will tell them about, yeah, bro, it's the end of the world.
Yeah, right.
I mean, what do you make of 2012? I mean, it's just, I'm having a December 21st party because I'm planning to be able to nurse my hangover over the Saturday and Sunday afterwards.
Well, I don't think this December 2012 thing really holds any weight to it. You know, there's some calculation errors in there. You know, did they account for the fact that July and August were added after this Mayan calendar was, you know, July and August were named after Julius Caesar and Augustus. So yeah, the whole idea, well, we know the date. That's kind of ridiculous. And then, you know, this other idea of, well, it's not really the end of the world. It's the end of an era. Where, you know, after the 21st, all of a sudden we're supposed to spontaneously evolve into a more enlightened creature. I see the exact opposite coming. I think we're less developed now. Matter of fact, there was a university study recently that said people in the 1700s were much more educated. I mean, they'd had less information, granted, but with the information they had, they were much more educated than we are today. Go back and read some of the founding fathers' letters, even to their wives. They were so eloquent, and the language was so wonderful. And then the idea of, like, farmers were entrepreneurs. They weren't corporate sellouts. They had a foundation where they understood the importance of freedom. They understood the importance of liberty. And they understood the difference, for goodness sakes. Right now, we don't even know what it is. And 52% of us don't even know if we want it. We're at a position in time right now where we're actually deciding if we want to be zoo animals. The conversation for humanity is, do I really want the government just to take care of me, give me 3 square meals and a place to live, or would I rather risk it and become free? I'd rather live a wild life, maybe die a little bit sooner. I mean, think about it. Think about the people who headed west in a wagon train. They could have stayed behind in New York City where they were, you know, developing electricity, developing power sources. But instead, they took a 3 to 4 month ride in a wagon with wooden wheels to head to some place they had no clue where they were going, no clue what they were going to do. And they knew that they would probably only live 10 to 15 years after they got there because of the rugged lifestyle. But they chose to do it anyway. Now, even the people who are for freedom, we don't even want to risk it. We're just saying, give it to me, give it to me. And the vast majority are saying, well, I don't even want freedom, just provide for me. So when we look at the direction we're heading, it's not towards a more enlightened species, that's for sure.
Reminds me of something Bill Cooper said about socialists. Socialism is essentially somebody electing to live with their daddy. And daddy buys your car.
Yep.
Daddy pays for the roof over your head. Daddy pays for the groceries. But if you want to take daddy's car to the next town, you've got to ask daddy's permission. If daddy tells you to take out the trash, you have to take out the trash. If daddy tells you you can't smoke weed in your room, you can't smoke weed in your room. That's the kind of thing that this mentality promotes, essentially. And have you ever met people who live with their own parents for way, way too long, and they're inherently irresponsible people who expect their mummy and daddy to clean up after them and provide them with everything that they need?
Oh, absolutely. Matter of fact, they even made a movie about it called Failure to Launch with Matthew McConaughey, and they kind of joked about the entire situation because that seems to be the direction that we're going in. So whether it's employment or school, where now in school it's not polite to fail a kid, so we just pass them anyway, and we just you did great, son. So there's no real area where we want to be rewarded for achievement and punished for failure. We don't want that anymore, and that's really where this fight is. I love the idea of talking about which bill should be passed and what legislation you should look out for and all this sort of stuff, but until we actually get people to have it in their hearts and minds again that they have something worth dying for, then they really have nothing worth living for. And if they have nothing worth living for, then they have nothing worth fighting for. And again, we're just talking because we love to hear ourselves think sometimes, unless we actually try to get to that point where we inspire that passion in the heart of people again.
I have so many conversations with people who tell me these great ideas of theirs and say that they're going to do them, and they just don't.
Well, the funny thing about that is I'm actually writing a second book called Who Shot My Duck, right along those same lines. People kept telling me at seminars, Josh, I'll get to that when I get my ducks in a row, or I'll get married when I get my ducks in a row. I'll buy a house when I get my ducks in a row. And I started asking people, I'm like, what are your ducks? And they didn't know. So I said, well, how do you know they're not in a row now? And then I was in a park writing the first book, and I was looking at all these ducks, and none of them ever got in a row. I mean, ducks just don't be like, hey, man, what's up? Nothing. You want to just get in a line? So the only time they line up is when they're actually moving towards a goal. So you have to move first. The ducks will line up behind you later.
Hmm. Isn't that interesting? Don't wait for other people in the group to start moving. You have to start moving first. Does that mean that every realization that you have, oh my God, my boss is a sociopath? You quit your job right then and there. Just walk out, and damn the consequences. I thought about my rent, I thought about the bills that I had to get paid, I thought about this bonus and everything, but nope, I'm getting out of here. Not in a ridiculously unreasonable fashion, but you got to get out of there sooner or later. So why not just do it now? Now maybe this gotta have them society, this now society, can be flipped on its ear. Instead of wanting everything to be given to you now society, I want to do everything myself now.
Amen. I'm behind you on that, 110%. It creates a more responsible society. It creates people that understand the impact. And I think we might have went to break. I'm hearing music.
Oh yeah. We are hearing the music. So we're going to boogie it down and be right back after the break with the final segment with the fabulous and flustering Josh Tully. Back in a minute, ladies and gentlemen.
and no one like me.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. We're broadcasting live on the American Freedom Radio Network. And if you can donate to American Freedom Radio, there's a little ads on the breaks there that I personally and also collaboratively made with a bunch of the listeners that we often have after the show Skype chats that you can join. So you can go to the chat room at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. And we actually get everybody talking together verbally across Skype. You know what's good about that is you realize, hey, I'm not alone. Isn't that the best thing? Knowing that you're not the only one who thinks that everybody else is crazy and you're the sane person. Josh Tully, welcome back.
Sometimes it feels like that, doesn't it? Once in a while you wake up and you're thinking, man, I swear I'm the only one left on the planet. I woke up in the Twilight Zone. Everybody else is off their rocker. But, you know, then you turn on alternative media and you find other people that believe the same things you believe, are looking at the same things you're looking at, and are raising the same red flags on the same issues. So you're not alone.
Yeah. And also, I've reiterated that point many times, you know, speaking as a New Zealander. I see the United States as integral to the fight back against the globalists and the global suppression syndrome against entrepreneurship and freedom in general. And I like to remind the Americans that they're not in this fight alone. You know, we're all right here, even though we're 10,000 kilometers away. We're still right behind you.
And even though I don't know how long a kilometer is, I know that you're there.
Exactly. It matters not the distance. And it matters not if you even understand the calculations of the distance. It could be a Googleplex billion light years away for all we care.
That's right. That's right. And, you know, there's really that element to it. The globalists want to push a global agenda. And free people are actually uniting underneath their nose to fight them. So, in a sense, they've created their own adversary. Because people are realizing, you know, hey, collectively, we have to fight the collection. It's an interesting place we find ourselves.
Well, sometimes in order to bring people together, you don't need to tell them, they don't all need to agree on what they want, but Amen. They can easily agree on what they don't want.
Yep, absolutely. Absolutely. And I think that's where we find ourselves. You know, we've talked about a lot of stuff tonight. We've talked about taking back control of the conversation, what it takes to expand freedom, and we need free enterprise. We also need to redefine what capitalism is, too. So many people think capitalism is responsible for the destruction of the economy. And in reality, they destroyed the economy through fascism and socialism, called it capitalism. So you blame capitalism. And in reality, we haven't had real capitalism in over 100 years now. So, you know, it's all part of that re-education process or that brain cleaning process from all the stuff that they've done to us over the years. And that's also why I'm excited about what Free and Equal is doing too, because they're putting together events and debates and the app. They have an app now. Go grab that. But that they're working towards that same agenda too, to get people back on the same page, to unite people who think differently, but as you said, don't want tyranny.
And it's surprising how simple it is, but often we get caught up in the complex ideas of it, and there's a lot of infighting and back and forth, even within the freedom movement. And, you know, it's like everybody's saying, I'm Spartacus, but they're not doing it to save Spartacus. They're saying it to get the recognition of being Spartacus.
Oh, yeah, dead on. Absolutely nailed it. There are so many people like that. And you know, that's just part of human nature, because you see it on the political sides too, which when we start to think strategically, we can realize that we can use that to our advantage. The same situation that creates human nature on a playground. I mean, 5-year-olds do it, for goodness sakes. I'm king of the hill. Well, until they actually throw you down, and then you go yelling to the teacher that they threw you down. So if we realize that principle exists, we can use that same principle towards the people who want to rule the world. You figure you have a party of about 8,000 people who are really trying to pull the strings on this thing. But at some point, they're going to get greedy amongst themselves, too, and say, hey, I want to be number one of the 8. And that provides a wonderful opportunity for us to start creating division amongst their ranks. And I think, you know, that's part of the strategy that we need going forward. there have been great people who came before you and I who were pointing out the evils of the Federal Reserve and Bilderberg for decades prior to us. And that's all well and fine, but just knowing the enemy's there does us absolutely no good unless we have a plan to defeat the enemy. And as always, you know, they divide us. So I think it's time that we start dividing them.
Yeah, indeed. And this is something we might have talked about over the break. It's as if the mainstream media are our competition and our enemy, not the other new media outlets, I think. And it's well worthwhile collaborating, going on other people's networks to promote yourself and getting them on your network to promote them and that sort of stuff. And it's kind of like, at the same time as sharing, you both collectively grow out of the experience because you get exposed to different people who would otherwise not be aware of you. And also at the same time, you develop relationships with other people who are on the same page as you. And that is a very, very powerful tool there.
Well, yeah, and I think something that people in alternative media need to realize too, because we spend so much time in it, we think everybody knows everything about it already. And we think, you know, because 90% of my Facebook friends know my position on things, so it's easy to think, well, everybody already knows about this stuff. But when it comes voting time, we realize, wait a second, we're maybe at 3-5% of the population. So there's really no need to be fighting over the 3-5. There are billions of people who need to get the message, who need to have an opportunity to become successful in their own life and to get the information about what's going on around them. So, yeah, I mean, unifying at this point is absolutely brilliant. And the other thing we have to keep in mind about that, too, is the next generation of all these elite that want to rule the world, this is the first generation where they haven't been able to control their children either. For decades, well, for hundreds of years, they've been able to brainwash their children into thinking that they're privileged, that what they're doing is benevolent. But now their grandchildren have access to Twitter. They have access to YouTube. So the Rothschilds family, for example, could be listening to us right now. And there's some grandkid thinking, oh, my gosh, my grandpa's the devil. And, you know, he starts waking up from the inside and we start eating away at the stronghold they have, too. So, you know, I love shooting salvos over the wall, so to speak.
Well, and essentially, who gave us this ability? It was them, isn't it? They did the scumbaggery, for which is our content, and they provided the internet and all of its control mechanisms for us to use against them.
Well, I think in a way it's gone beyond their control, and I think we're starting to see panic at the upper echelons of the global elite. We're reaching that point where even if they wanted to, they can't control the genie. The technology bubble is out. There are so many smart people out there who could rewire a different form of internet before the month is out that even if they crash this one, another one would take its place. Matter of fact, I was talking to a guy earlier today who said that he could embed a signal into my broadcast that if certain people had a sound card programmed right, they could pick up a message that nobody else would hear. They would hear it, and it would print out on their screen through my traditional broadcast. So there's so many alternatives. Yeah, exactly. I know. There are so many alternatives out there that really you can't put the genie back in the bottle.
Mm-hmm. And people will call you crazy and go, oh, that's like Buck Rogers or something. You know, Buck Rogers was made like near on 100 years ago or something like that. This is 2012. All that stuff that we've seen in sci-fi movies for the last couple of decades from RoboCop or whatever, we've got that gear, man.
Oh, yeah, we do. I mean, 30,000 drones over our heads. 20 years ago, nobody would have believed that day was here. We have nanotechnology that can link with your brain and have you connected to the internet 24 hours a day to limit or actually take the limit off of your memory bank. You'd have access to the world's collection of information. We have drones that are going to be walking around your neighborhood. We have contact lenses that can act as Google goggles, see somebody and recognize them. We have automated weapon systems that can recognize you and fire at you without having to have anybody control it. I mean, the technology that's out there, it really seems like science fiction, especially if you rewind the clock and watch like the original Star Trek with William Shatner. He had a cell phone in his pocket. It was a little device he opened up to talk to other people on the ship. And everybody's like, oh my goodness, that'll never come. Now 92% of the Earth's population has access to this technology, and it's so cheap they give it away for free.
Mm. And this is just the stuff that's been announced. Imagine what other secret stuff the government's cooking up there. They could have full-blown teleportation for all we know. You know, the Star Trek frickin' being beamed in some other direction. Who knows? And it would be really cool because you'd never have to be stuck in traffic again.
Yeah, that would be kind of, you know, some of this stuff is really cool. But I read an article yesterday how they're making an android to go up into the International Space Station to keep these guys company, and how it's going to have a certain level of artificial intelligence. And I started thinking, wait a second, I've seen this movie. It's called I, Robot, and it reminds me of that old, you know, space television show, Danger, Will Robinson, Danger. And at some point, you start thinking, okay, we're going to lose control of this thing, and we become the prey as opposed to the hunter.
Yeah, that android's probably going to go nuts and get really ticked off.
Yep.
Get sick of eating the liquid electric foods that they've got up there, and not be happy with the Russian guy and how much he drinks and stuff like that, and just basically tear up the place, and we'll have a nice space station catastrophe, and some guy in Palestine, Texas, will probably have it fall on its head in a big flaming heap of wreckage. Thank you, Josh Tolley, for coming on the show with us today. It's been a pleasure.
Fun.
I'd love to come on your show if you'd ever allow me.
Yeah, but we have to plug Free and Equal. We have to talk about that. So we'll have to be back on. But go to freeandequal.org, get their app, stay ahead of the mainstream media.
Yeah, and it's not that hard to do. All you have to do is turn off the mainstream media, and you're already ahead of it. I think Thomas Jefferson once said that the people who only read newspapers are less informed than the people who read nothing at all. You listen to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. Josh Tolley was my guest, and freeandequal.org is the website. And we'll see you again sometime, ladies and gentlemen, assuredly.